Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
This end hit along the wall, a puck to the left point, kept in by Orpik, down in front, a shot, and they score! And it's Devontae Smith-Pelly on a save at a left point! DSP save of the day! We're tied at three with 10:08 to go! How about Devontae? The Caps win life here in Game 5!
Welcome back to Japers Rink Radio. I'm your host, Adam Stringham, and today I'm happy to be joined by John Press. How you doing, John?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I would be doing better if we were preparing for a Game 7 right now. We're recording this on Sunday the 15th, but instead we're here to talk about how the Maple Leafs lost another Game 7 last night.
Yeah, that's something. It's always good to know that it could be worse, so, you know. That's good perspective to set the table before we go into the deep dive on what happened this year in this playoff series for the Caps.
Yeah, it is important to remember. Obviously, local media or former local media was taking some nice shots at Ovechkin since the Capitals were eliminated. So it is good to keep in perspective that those boys in Toronto are still yet to win a playoff series since 2004. And I'd say that they have now surpassed Boudreaux era Capitals for playoff utility, 100%.
Well, I mean, they're up there, but let's not forget that Boudreaux's team did lose, to the Canadiens when they were a President's Trophy winner. That's something that the Leafs haven't done. And the number of times that the Leafs, the Caps were upset in the playoffs. I don't know. I haven't run the numbers on that, but the fact that the Leafs haven't gotten out of the first round, but they also haven't won a division. They haven't won, obviously, the President's Trophy. So, I'll take what we've got. And, of course, I'll take 2018. And I know that you were referencing Mike Wise's comment that as great as he is, if Ovechkin never gets to at least another Stanley Cup final, his career will be unfulfilled for most Capitals fans. That just a ridiculous statement. I mean, there's no dumber combination of three words than only one cup, you know. It's just stupid. It's just moving goalposts. And you know what, if you want a second one, then it would be he doesn't have three, like what's his name in Pittsburgh or whatever. So constantly moving goalposts. Ovechkin's career is incredibly fulfilled for Caps fans, and I would think for himself, even if there are numerous disappointments along the way.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the Capitals and current disappointments. It seems like at this breakdown day, the mood among the players was dour, as you'd expect, but maybe more so than the last few postseasons. They seem to think that they let this one slip away, and I certainly agree with that. What do you think?
Yeah, they did. You know, it's for me, the bottom line and why this is such a disappointing year is that, you know, this was the chance for them to actually go out and do to someone else what was always, you know, done to them, what's been done to them number of times, you know, especially by Montreal, obviously, but, you know, by the Rangers, by just losing to teams that aren't, on paper at least, as good as you were. But at the end of the day, they kind of reverted to themselves. And it's, you know, the Caps, only the Caps could really, like, take this series that they shouldn't have even been competitive in and shouldn't have had a shot at and turn it into, like, a disappointing gut punch loss. They gave it away. And, you know, it's always hard with the counterfactuals. You know, maybe if Hathaway's goal, empty net shot doesn't ring off the post, maybe if it goes in and they end up winning that game, maybe Florida comes out harder next game. You can't say, well, then they're up 3-1 and then they were up 3-0 in the next game, and then that would have been the series if they could have held on to that. I don't think that's necessarily true, but reality is those two games were real big blown leads. And, you know, one wasn't a big lead that was blown, but it was just blown so late. And you know, especially the 3-0 game, what's particularly disappointing and frustrating as a fan, and I would hope as a player, is that once they went up 3-0, they didn't play the right way. And, you know, we hear a lot about the right way and that kind of thing. But, you know, they have TJ Oshie, like, dangling through neutral zone trying to make some play rather than just chipping the puck in and getting it deep up 3-0. You know, they have John Carlson trying to one-time a shot off the end boards that's bouncing, and it's an unlucky bounce. But, you know, maybe just put your skate behind it and make sure you knock that down, settle it, and if you have to chip it back behind the net, so be it. You know, it's veterans making rookie mistakes and giving away a game. And then, you know, I don't get as wound up about losing one goal leads to great teams. That happens. Teams come and, you know, sometimes they score, but the 3-0 one and particularly the way it happened was disappointing. And of course, in game six, the Giroux goal that Samsonov lets through his five hole was just, you know, one of those deflating goals. And what we talked about all season with the goalies is it's not necessarily the save percentage, which, you know, for Samsonov wasn't good all year. For Vanacek was, you know, mediocre at best. But a lot of it really is the when they're giving up the goals and the goals that they're giving up. They can just be so deflating when you're, you know, fighting with a great team and you're right there, and then your goalie lets in just a complete howler. It's rough as a player, and it's rough to come back from. And, you know, the series wasn't on Samsonov. He was better than I would have expected in the series. But, you know, sometimes you need the saves.
Yeah, I mean, I'd go so far as to say Samsonov was actually better, not just than what I expected, but I'd say he was better than I hoped. I mean, the goal that he gave up to tie that game was not good, but I'd say his defense left him out to dry on multiple other goals. And if I'm looking, like, kind of for the primary point of concern for me in kind of or kind of to point fingers, it would be for the guys that were, you know, Samsonov wasn't the only Cap that was on the ice for every single Florida goal in game six. So,
right.
And, you know, I'm sure that we're going to, you already touched on him a little bit, but I thought John Carlson was, I mean, I don't know how to put it kindly. He was borderline atrocious defensively in the series. I mean, I really don't know how to sugarcoat it.
Yeah, I think the last game stands out. I don't think he was terrible actually throughout the series. I do think the last game stands out, and I guess the unlucky bounce and maybe the bad decision in that. But you know, I don't think, to me, Martin Ferravari hasn't been consistently good since at least December, and yet he's been he's kept that top line role, top pair role with Carlson. And, you know, it just wasn't working and they never went away from it. I mean, I would have thrown Trevor Van Riemsdyk up there. I think Trevor Van Riemsdyk had an excellent series and an excellent season. And I think he could really be a terrific partner for Carlson in some ways, because I think he settles it a little more. You know, I'm not blaming Ferravari for Carlson's shortcomings, but at the same time, you know, you shouldn't blame Carlson for Ferravari's shortcomings. It was just a duo that didn't come together. I thought John Carlson actually had a much better year defensively than he has in the past couple. And, you know, I thought his mobility was better this year than it had been previously. But they didn't get the job done, certainly in game six. And, you know, they weren't alone. You know, Orlov and Nick Jensen had a rough series. Nick Jensen had a terrific regular season, but he just got caved in the playoffs. Seemed maybe unsure on some plays, and you know, that's a duo that was terrific in the regular season, like terrific, like, yep. Elite, like behind Taves and Makar, kind of like right there kind of duos, and they just weren't. You know, add them to the list of players that weren't as good as they needed to be in this playoff series. And it's not hard to see how a series in which the Caps had to be near perfect to be competitive. And they weren't anywhere close to near perfect. So with the exception of like game one, which was brilliant. And, you know, they had moments here and there throughout the series that were good. And their special teams were exceptional through the series. But it wasn't enough. I mean, when you're facing a team like Florida, you know, you beat them either by, you know, very generally by your goalie being great and he wasn't, or their goalie being not great, you know, very bad, and Bobrovsky wasn't. And you know, that's over an oversimplification, but you know, it's really hard to win these series when everything doesn't line up for you, when you have that massive talent disadvantage.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess I think less of Florida now than I did before the series started. And it's not that I think that their roster's weak. I do think they have a lot of talent on there. I mean, we talked before about kind of the coaching advantage, how repeatedly on the show we've talked about playoff coaching and how it matters more in the playoffs. And I think generally we saw that here. I think the Capitals were the better coached team.
Agreed.
I don't have any expectations that Florida is going to go on and do great things in these playoffs. I certainly would have them as the underdog versus Tampa. I mean, how have your perceptions of Florida changed throughout and currently versus before?
I think that's fair. I didn't watch a ton of them during the regular season. And I'm not the first person to say it, but the fact that they were the, you know, cardiac cats coming that had to come back all the time, that's a red flag to me. It reeks of like the early Boudreaux years, you know, when like the flip the switch kind of Caps who could show up for a third period and win games or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily translate in the playoffs when you're playing really good teams. I mean, I definitely thought that they were a team that had enough to take out the Caps. I agree with you. I think I would rather, I think I'd have Tampa in the next round. I'd have Carolina in the next round, and I'd have Colorado over them in the next round. So they've got an uphill climb. Their defense doesn't impress me, and you know, they can score goals, but at some point you need to also be able to kind of lock it down against good teams. And you know, they could barely lock it down against the Caps. So they're probably not gonna do the thing.
No, and but it was staggering to kind of see that. I mean, playoff hockey is all about, and at least I thought this heading into the series, you know, all about the, there was all the talk about how good the Panthers are at coming back. Yes, that's true. But I also thought with the Capitals, when they were able to take a lead, they'd start to have the ability to counterpunch on Florida. I thought they started taking more chances, and that would kind of allow the Caps to like utilize their trap and get these kind of counterattack plays like you see if you're watching soccer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we saw a bit of that, but obviously when they got the 3-goal lead. But, I mean, what do you think happened in Game 6 after – I mean, was it just a fluky shot that got through Samsonov? Or how do you think the Capitals were playing after Backstrom's tip in the third period of Game 6?
I didn't think they were playing – poorly. I think they were playing better than they played when they had a 3-0 lead in Game 5.
Low bar, but
yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you saw it basically in Game 1. You saw the way that Peter Laviolette wants his team to play, and the team played it. And you know, Evgeny Kuznetsov said after the game, it's not fun to play that, but it's, you know, we can play beer league in the summer or whatever he said. But then they kind of got away from the discipline to play that. And, you know, part of that's on the players. Part of that's probably on the coach. But they got away from that. You saw it very loose in Game 2. You saw it come back and be a little bit better at times throughout the rest of the series. But the inability to lock it down, lock down those leads in the last 3 games is not nothing. It's troubling. And, you know, we talk about the percentage, the likelihood that they would win those games. And you see, like, you know, 95% that they win Game 4, 90% that they win Game 5. You know, that I don't mean to be snarky, but that doesn't really consider who the teams are that are playing. And the Caps have had trouble with that kind of thing. But, you know, again, the Caps only gave up 7 shots in the third period of that game, in Game 6, right? So, you know, they scored twice. The Panthers scored twice on 7 shots. And you just need better goaltending than that.
Yeah, look, the Giroux goal was bad, but the other one was, I mean, that was pretty much unsavable, right? Pass through the crease.
Barkov?
Yeah, wide open backdoor play. Carlson just watches the guy get in, like, one on none. I mean, it was a bang play.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that they only gave up 7 shots in the third period, you know, that's I mean, obviously that one was a pretty high quality one, but you know, the system seemed to me was working there for the most part, and it just, you know, has a breakdown, and you need to be disciplined, and you need to be committed and structured. And let's be honest, this team often has not been that. You know, they haven't had that structural discipline, that that attention to detail. Like, you know, one of the most staggering stats that no one seems to be mentioning except me at this point is that they've now had 11 games under Laviolette in the playoffs, And Alex Ovechkin doesn't have an even strength goal yet. That's troubling. Yeah. You know, neither does Mantha. There are other players who don't, obviously, as well. But, you know, they haven't really scored a lot of 5-on-5 goals. You know, Ovechkin's kind of obviously a microcosm of this team in a lot of ways. He's never been a big attention to detail kind of player, right? He's a little bit more of a brute force kind of player. And, you know, you need attention to detail. You need discipline. The teams that are able to win and compete, are the teams that have that. And, you know, they didn't seem to have that this year. They certainly didn't have it in the past couple years. I don't know. I mean, it's an ongoing issue with these guys.
Yeah, especially when they don't have, you know, that on paper talent. I mean, it was pretty clear watching that the capital strategy to get out of the zone, if there was any pressure, was to chip it off the boards. I mean, they were not. There were wide kind of swatches in the series where it felt like the Capitals did nothing with the puck for 5 to 10 minutes at a time. And despite that, you know, they did have good stretches. I mean, they were usually at the first period. I thought the Capitals in general, every first period was a good first period for the team. Mm-hmm. And as the game went on, they either started kind of putting it up the board more, or maybe, as you said, maybe they're losing focus. They're not able to pay attention to that details, but that's not what you would expect from a team, as you mentioned, that is full of veterans, of people that have been through the ringer. You know, I don't want to give too much flack to Ovechkin. I thought he did his best. I mean, he had the great hit on Ekblad to start game six, set the tone well for the Caps. I thought, especially at the start of the game, the team played well again. But maybe it's those old legs, not just the mental aspect, but the team as itself, they just slow down and they're not in the right place at the right time. Maybe it's not because they don't know where they need to be, but because they physically are no longer able to get there. Thinking of a guy like Nicholas Backstrom.
Yeah.
If you're Brian McClellan, I know there's still that dichotomy of, you know, we really want Ovechkin to catch Gretzky, but the team still wants to be competitive. And I mean, I know they at least want to be winning playoff rounds. I mean, what do you think the team has to do to retool or at least start getting some youth in big points or big spaces in the lineup to kind of mix it up and to give different threats to the opposition, make them worry more about just the minute zone time, make them worry about some on the rush plays?
Yeah, I think that it's tough right now because to me, the Caps can't skate. And it's not, you know, obviously Nicholas Backstrom is a great example of that. And he's not the player he was, but they really generally can't skate. They're not a fast team. And they're both not a fast team and they don't play fast. You know, you don't have to be the fastest team in the world to play fast. You don't have to have, you know, 12 guys out there, 18 guys out there with blazing straightaway speed to play fast. On the same token, you don't have to, if you have those guys, with great straightaway speed, just because they have it doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, playing fast. So, but for the Caps, it's both. They are slow. They're not great skaters. They play slow. To me, it looks like a team that is a little outdated to the way that the game is played now and the way that where the game is headed. And I think that they've also drafted that way. I don't see a lot of guys in the pipeline with plus speed or plus skating. You know, they've been obsessed with drafting dudes out of the WHL and ignored, for the most part, a lot of skilled Europeans and NCAA type players. And, you know, the result is it's kind of a chicken or an egg thing because, you know, right now they've had 7 drafts under McClellan. And they've had, in that time, they've basically had kind of old school defense first coaches, right? You have obviously Barry and then one of his disciples, more or less, and then Laviolette. And they're, you know, you have these defense first coaches who want to play a certain way. And I think they've kind of drafted towards that. Then you have these guys in your pipeline and the guys you've drafted, and you kind of have to play, you know, the way that your roster sort of dictates. You know, you can't decide to just be run and gun when you don't have defensemen that can skate and can get the puck up. So, you know, there are a few guys, obviously, you know, it's a generalization about where I see them and how they're doing. But I think that they've kind of, they're in danger right now, to me, of having the game sort of pass them by. And, you know, whether that is whether that could have been avoided or not, I guess is up for debate. You know, they went and won a cup, so it's all gravy, but you know, you start also, you know, refocusing is that when guys like, you know, you've lost some guys who are that kind of speedier, player, but you know, if the coaching was never going to be using them in that way, you know, what's the point? So, it is, they're not going to rebuild, you know, they're not going to tear it all down. They're going to try to keep competitive and keep trying to make the playoffs and then see what happens. But, you know, the roster has issues and, it's going to be hard to dig out of it because right now, they're kind of in a spot where their best players are their worst players. And, certainly some of their most expensive players are their least productive, players. And, in some ways, so, I don't know. It's dicey. I think that they probably need to make some kind of shakeup move. But I've also thought that in the past and they haven't. So, that core is still here and, you know, it's not getting any younger, obviously, and it's not getting any faster, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it really is interesting. I mean, we talked before about the Mantha Vrana trade and it was, you know, the best part of that trade, probably from the Capitals' perspective, is you were getting a guy that was going to fit into the type of game that Peter Laviolette wanted to play, right? I mean, and, you know, whatever has come out about people kind of saying Vrana's, you know, not liked by his coaches and all that stuff, which very well may be true. But, I mean, you and I came into this series, and I think we both put Mantha as the X factor. He was the guy that we thought would have to step up for the Capitals beyond the goalies for them to win. Mantha had, I thought, one dominant game, but where was he the rest of the series?
Yeah, I mean, he pretty much disappeared. I didn't like him on the line with Backstrom and Johansson. I thought that was that line played slow and was slow. Obviously, like we said, I thought he was terrific in game one. I thought he was terrific in game three. And but you know, after game three, he kind of went away. I thought he was actually pretty good in game six, if we're picking nits, but you know, no goals, second straight playoff year with as many goals as Vrana had. So, you know, you saw in game one exactly what the Caps see in Anthony Mantha, and you probably saw in games 2 and 5 sort of what Detroit saw in Anthony Mantha. So jury's out. The guy's got to want to give a shit and want to play and engage. Because when he's engaged, he is a noticeably impactful player. But, you know, for somebody of that size to disappear, it's quite the magic trick.
Yeah, it really is. Another guy we talked about a lot in our preview podcast, he did show up on the score sheet a couple times in a good way. What did you think of the series from Mr. Schultz?
Oh, I thought he was surprisingly good, actually. If you were going to have me list the guys who I was impressed with in the series, he would actually be on the list. I'm not a big Schultz guy. And I think that we've seen the last of him as a Cap, probably. I thought he had a good series. I thought he and Van Riemsdyk were very good together when they were on the ice. And, you know, he did some good things and wasn't so horrible. I thought he was good. You know, probably one of the more pleasant, one of the guys who was better than I would have expected. And that list isn't long.
Well, I mean, you gave me the easy follow-up. Who else was on your list of guys that impressed you?
Well, Tom Wilson in a minute and 52 seconds of play. You know, I think at some point we should acknowledge that the Caps were without arguably their most impactful player, right? You know, impactful good, impactful bad, but mostly impactful really good. You know, yeah. A penalty killer. A tone setter, a guy who could have slotted in on that top line or on that second line or on that third line. You know, so that was a big loss, and yeah. Just they're a different team without him, and certainly missed his presence throughout the series. But other than him, guys that impressed me, you know, Samsonov was better than I thought, but not great and not really good enough. And, you know, I don't know if we're planning to touch on his status going forward at some later point. So I'll just stick a pin in that one for now. We can talk about that later. Oshie, you know, scored six goals in six games. And that, even with that horrendous play in game three that started the big comeback, you know, hard not to be impressed by his six goals in the games. And Nick Backstrom had 6 points in six games and was impactful. And I don't think it's a huge coincidence that two old guys like Oshie and Backstrom were effective for the most part, despite missing half the season. You know, so these were basically early second half of the season games for them because they didn't just play 82. Being injured, this is what we hoped when they were injured. It was that it would keep them fresh for a long playoff run, and it, you know, kept them fresh for a short playoff run for the most part. You know, Backstrom was miserable on one of those Verhaeghe goals and terrible in the faceoff circle. But at the same time, he won the faceoff that led to the game tying goal in game six that put the game to overtime. So, you know, the ups and downs with Nick, probably 6 points in six games is probably way better than you probably could have fairly expected from him. Beyond that, though, I don't know. Kuznetsov had his moments. I don't know. What about you? Is there anyone that really stood out in a positive way for you from that series?
I mean, I guess we can just get into Samsonov now. I mean, he was just, maybe my expectations were just so low. I mean, but I thought really, I only thought he gave up one crappy goal the whole time, in every game he played. I thought, you know, the Capitals really didn't have a right to be in Game four, I think, was the one where I thought he was really he stood on his head for him in the first, really most of that game. I thought he was great, and the game tying goal that they scored with 2 minutes left was off of a broken play in front, and the guy, it hit off the post and went in. I thought he played exceptionally well. I don't know if it changes what I think they should do with him moving forward, but I thought he was the goalie the Capitals thought they had when they drafted him. I don't remember who said that online. Someone said that on Twitter, and I fully agree with it. But what do you think about him moving forward?
Yeah, I'm not as rosy on his performance as you were. There was some good fortune involved, and for sure he was good. Especially what I especially liked about him was his he wasn't letting in the medium and low danger goals that plagued him all season. Then there's the Giroux goal, Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's just poorly timed and just a complete disaster on timing. To me, he went from, in my opinion, a guy that I did not want back at all, really, to a guy who I would be comfortable bringing back on a team friendly deal, to be a backup to somebody more dependable and, somebody that gives you more of a chance, on a regular basis than he does, with like a possible plan for Samsonov to again take the reins after that guy leaves, whether it's Varlamov for a year or whether it's, some free agent that they sign, or the market sucks. There aren't a lot of guys out there who fit the bill because in part goaltending is so unpredictable, but also in part the guys that are up and available are, not the guys that you're ready to go all in on by any means. So, they had the right idea. They had it perfect when they signed Henrik Lundqvist, right? That was the perfect situation. And it didn't, ever since then, they've been just scrambling and reeling in goal. And if they even think for a second of bringing these two guys back, there's no reason to expect anything except more of the same. So, they've got to address the position, and I don't think it can be done internally.
Yeah, I thought, you talk about the Giroux goal. We definitely saw in game two, Vanecek gave up, I think, almost the same exact goal, right? Right. I mean, right after the Capitals had tied game two, I think he gave up a goal to put the Capitals back down, or the Caps brought it within one, and that
right,
it,
right.
But it was one or the other. But,
right.
It was, there were two, like, clearly bad goals given up by the Caps goaltenders that were big momentum shifters in the series. So it definitely need an external option. I mean, I don't like any of the guys in the AHL, and it doesn't sound like you do either.
No. The answer is not Zach Fucale or Phoenix Copley. So, and the answer is not Vitek Vanecek, and the answer is not Ilya Samsonov, not yet. And maybe they, I don't know enough about the position or the dynamics or anything like that, but they may also consider their options at goalie coach. Maybe Scott Murray isn't the guy there to fix what they need fixed. But to me, you can't run these guys back.
Yeah, throw some money at Mitch Korn. Maybe he's no longer tied to the island. So,
right,
would be interesting to see. John, we're at about 40 minutes. I think there's still a couple more good things to touch on. If you've got a few more, we talked about Laviolette. Said he was the better guy in the series, better coach in the series. Definitely think that. Just talked about Mitch Korn. Obviously, Barry Trotz is no longer the head coach of the New York Islanders. you know, he's not going to come back to Washington, but it does make people start to think again about, you know, maybe not what if, but who would you rather have right now? You know, take the history out of it. Who's the better coach? Is it Barry Trotz, Peter Laviolette? Besides just doing the thing, are there any kind of gaps in Laviolette's game that are really standing out to you right now?
No, I don't know that. I don't know that there's any necessarily a huge meaningful difference between the two. And to be sure, the problems with the Caps are more on the roster than they are behind the bench right now. The interesting thing to me about Laviolette is that he's entering the last year of his contract now. And we saw that Trotz in the last year of his contract, it was kind of an awkward situation. Aside from winning the Stanley Cup, of course, but there was, you know, at least one time in the regular season when they were probably one loss away from just shit canning him in the middle of the year. Right. Because, it's not so often that coaches just play out their deals. And, usually you extend a guy, before, the season or, you know, early in his, lame duck year, so to speak, or you do what Lou Lamoriello did with Trotz and you don't even get to the awkwardness because you fire the guy before before you even start that last year of the contract. I don't think the Caps are interested in extending Peter Laviolette right now. I don't know that he's given them reason to necessarily, and he does have a reputation of sort of losing effectiveness after 3 years or so, 3 or 4 years. So I don't think they're going to fire him. I don't think they're going to extend him. I don't think they're going to fire him because I don't think they want to eat $5 million on his contract this year. And, you know, you don't fire a guy unless you know that you've got a better option behind him to bring in. So, and I don't see that right now. But you know, I don't know that they're thrilled, with what they're seeing. You know, I think the season in some ways was a bit of a disappointment. This isn't a team that's gone in as a wild card, in the past. So it's a little bit of a disappointment there. And then of course, losing those three games where you had the lead, that's not something that Barry Trotz's team did with a lot of regularity. And, part of that has to come down to coaching, but at the same time, you know, this is a team that, was a 100-point team, despite missing his entire second line for half a season. You got Alex Ovechkin his 50 goals with this guy. So, the expectations are high around here, and another first round loss is certainly disappointing, and having four in a row is certainly disappointing. But you know, I don't know that there's a guy that's a better fit right now for this team than Laviolette.
Yeah, I'm not so sure either. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Joel Quenneville's not someone I think he's got too much off ice stuff you probably wouldn't want to bring in.
Ditto Babcock.
Exactly right. So
plus they're not going to pay $6 million to one of those guys while they're also paying $5 million to have Laviolette not coach them. So if they were to fire him, they'd probably be going on the cheap, because you know you're already in a $5 million hole before you even sign the new coach, yeah. You know? So, you know, what does Jeff Halpern take as a coach? You know, what is, or Lane Lambert, or, you know, whoever, you know, if you start thinking about guys, if you want to go down that, like, no experience again, experience, which I don't think I want to. I think that was the last time. Todd Reardon was the last time I want to see that in the OV era, I think.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah.
I think Laviolette will be around unless Ovechkin all of a sudden isn't scoring for a long period of time. I actually think that that is a likely would be the driver of his departure. Or, I mean, if the team's absolutely garbage, that too. But, I mean, I think this team will be adequate in the regular season. I mean, you look at how bad the rest of the Metro was this year, and you think, yeah, they got a real chance of making it in again, or at least that's my thought. I mean, what do you think about this Capitals team, assuming they don't make any significant overhauls?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, every year people are ready to write them off, and every year they're back at 100 points. So I think there's probably enough talent on the roster to be competitive again, to fight for a wild card spot, or, you know, maybe a spot in the top three in the division. But, you know, Carolina's going to be the best team in the division again. The Rangers are showing signs of being on the upswing. You know, Pittsburgh's always Pittsburgh. They're kind of in the same boat as the Caps, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of everybody writes them off, and yet there they are at the end of the year, right there. So those two are kind of in the same boat. The Islanders, I think, are probably shit. I don't know who's going to coach them, but that roster is a nightmare. Yep. Columbus doesn't really do anything for me. And Jersey and Philly, I mean, they would have to get massively better immediately to compete. Like, not just improve, but, you know, that's a team that, you know, combined won as many games as the Rangers won. So I don't know that they're going to scare me. So, yeah, the Caps should be there again, you know, should be right there fighting for a bottom end playoff spot and a chance to once again face a much better team and do whatever they do.
To give you hope and then remind you that it's not 2018 anymore, John.
It's not. No. I mean, 2018 wasn't, I mean, in 2018, we probably said it's not 2017 anymore. It's not 2016. It's not 2010 anymore. Yeah. You know, the window was supposedly closed then, but you know, it's just, I could definitely, after game one, I could have seen the Caps and game four, you know, eking out this series. But there's no way this team was going far, you know?
Yeah, I didn't.
Even if they managed to expose those weaknesses that Florida has and hold on to leads, you know, they would get stomped by Tampa next round. They would, you know,
maybe not. I don't know. You know, anything can happen in the playoffs, right, John?
Yeah. That's the beauty.
But yeah, I wouldn't have had them as the favorites. I mean, you and I both had them losing in this round, and they did. And but they definitely didn't do it how I thought they would. That's for sure.
They were competitive and in every game. And so maybe they can hang a banner for that.
Well, I don't know if you saw Toronto's coach today said that
this
handshake line was really different. You know, it was much more respect this time. So
that is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Maybe it was you who tweeted that. Someone pointed that out to me and I was like, oh, this is juicy. That's Nashville putting up a banner type stuff. So
yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was bad. Which makes me wonder if Barry Trotz might be going to Toronto. That'd be an interesting one, but
yeah.
If you were Brian McClellan and there was one move you could make this offseason, and this is kind of ignoring what I don't know how much you've looked at Twitter today and seen this kind of what McClellan's saying about Backstrom, and it's looking like there's a possibility he won't even play next year. But if you could make one move for the Capitals roster going into next season, one giant thing to shake it up, what would it be?
I guess, oh man, it's so hard to say, but I guess it would be convincing Nick Backstrom to retire. It's like, it's horrible. It's like, makes me sad to even like think about it. But you know, he's $9 million a year. And as long as he's $9 million a year, even if he heads down that, like, we're going to put him on LTIR for the rest of his LTIR for the rest of his career or whatever. You know, that it's still somewhat limiting. But if they were able to get out from under that, that's probably, it probably gives them the most flexibility to do something. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that there's anything else that could be as impactful. I mean, $9 million is a lot of money, you know, that is, that's like they could go sign Philip Forsberg or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. So what about you? What's your call?
You know, it was easier to ask the question than to give the answer. That's for sure. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to do another one of these in a couple of weeks, and I'll have to get back to you because I'm still. I think what's really going to be interesting for me is going to be to see which teams. I really want to see if Toronto implodes on itself. I was, you know, obviously I thought they played a pretty good series, but I always feel like that market's just like one step and that organization's just one step from doing something incredibly stupid. And all of a sudden they're just Michael Nylander, even last night after watching that game 7, they were talking about him on the TNT post game shows being a guy that might be up on the block. William Nylander. Yeah. Not Michael Nylander. If William Nylander was available, I mean, I would be going, I'd probably put almost anybody on the Capitals roster up in a trade to try to get William Nylander. I think he's on an amazing contract, cost controlled. He's an amazing player. Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's complaints about his work rate, but I think when you watch him play 9 times out of 10, I don't see that. And he's also a guy that grew up in the DC area. And, I think he's got ties to the team. So, if I would be looking to get like kind of a mid-20s guy that I thought could help lead the Capitals into the future. And I think a guy like that could be William Nylander. Philip Forsberg's another guy that's kind of in a similar age bracket that might be kind of interesting. I think the team needs, I don't think it's Mantha. I don't think Mantha's the guy that they were kind of looking for, another like kind of extend the window type guy. But I think the Caps need something like that, especially a guy with speed. I really thought that they only had one way to score against Florida. What percentage of their goals came on the power play? I mean, right. or a nice like grinder out goal from like the fourth line. But, you know, where's the dynamic offense from the first two lines? I just didn't see it.
Not at all.
And you did see it from Florida. Granted, that's what Florida's built on. But Tampa, I mean, look at the Capitals in 2018. Look at these teams that win, and they have players that make game-breaking plays every now and again. And the Capitals have been getting rid of those guys for years. And it shows now on the roster. There's no more Burakovsky. There's no more Vrana. You wrote articles about it back in the day, about kind of these game-breaking players. And do the Capitals have any of those under the age of 28?
Do the Capitals have any of those? Full stop. Kuzi and theoretically Ovi in some ways, but they don't. And part of that is the cost of winning a Stanley Cup, and you'll gladly take it. But, you know, part of it is a little self-inflicted as well. And, you know, they have coaches who like certain guys or want to coach certain ways. And if you don't fit in that, I guess you're gone. And eventually so is that coach. And then what are you left with? So, it's hard. There's no way to dig out of that. And it's, you know, to the point we were making about drafting earlier, you know, that's it's put them in a spot that to me If it was me, I'd be taking some more swings at the draft, but I would have been all along too. I think that they've been, their drafting's been a little outdated for a while now, and it's certainly begun to show. But again, you know, it's also a team that's been drafting in the low 20s for 15 years now, basically, you know. It's not like they've got Barkovs and Huberdeaux and Ekblads, because those guys were all, you know, top 2-3 picks for Florida in the in like 2014-ish area and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's you understand where it comes from, and you have to be realistic about expectations and look at it. It may seem dire when we're looking at the Caps in a bubble, but you know, you also need some perspective on what other teams have done, and so your expectations can be realistic. And you know, of course, we'd love every first round pick to be a great player, but you know, that's not reality when you're picking in the low 20s, and they've done pretty well there, drafting there. But yeah, the lack of game breakers is concerning. And it, again, to me, it goes back to speed and skating, and they just don't have enough there.
Yeah, it's certainly a little dire, and I know our old friend Corey Pronman likes to write about how bad the Capitals prospect pool is. Unfortunately, I think he's usually right. Especially right now, it's a bit dire. All right, John, these are the last meaty questions. The Capitals, according to Cap Friendly, I'm looking at right now, and these include some guys that aren't regular on the roster, have six UFAs. All right, we have Mojo, Johan Larson, Justin Schultz, Michael Kempney, Matt Irwin, Phoenix Copley. All right. Are any of them going to be back next year?
Read me the guys again.
Mojo.
Yeah.
Johan Larson.
Yeah.
Justin Schultz. Michael Kempney. Matt Irwin.
No. Those guys are all gone. Okay. All gone. See ya.
Yeah. I think you are correct.
And it not be. Yeah. Not one of those guys. I mean, Johansson did some fine things, but no, he's not part of the future.
Yeah, I wonder if I'd keep Mojo if it was around. It says he was only 750K cap hit this year. I mean, if that's true, I mean, I'd take him for 750, right?
Yeah, but I mean, think about who that pushes out then. You know, at some point you want opportunities for Connor McMichael and for some of the young guys that might have some upside. I don't know. Sure, run it back with Marcus Johansson and his, you know, 2% shooting percentage or whatever.
The guy who had like the worst goals versus expected like 8 years ago when we used to be able to get that data.
Yeah. Had a breakaway in game four that would have cemented it, and you wouldn't even have needed Hathaway's
empty netter,
right?
Yeah, that is true. That was a thing. I do recall. Well, I guess it's gonna be an interesting offseason for the Capitals, John. I think you're definitely right. This is the last guy. I mean, you already kind of talked about what moves you'd make. When we did this podcast at the end of last season, maybe even when we did during the summer, and correct me if I'm misrepresenting your viewpoint, you were 95% ready to move on from Evgeny Kuznetsov. What do you feel about him today?
I think he's you can't move on from him now. I think he had a much better year this season, you know, I don't think you can move on from him because you don't have anything there. You know, with Backstrom being ineffective or maybe not even there, Lars Eller had a bad year. I thought he was better in the playoffs, but you know, it's not a guy I would ever count on for being my, you know, top six center anymore. And if he ever was, you know, I do like McMichael at center more than I like him on the wing. But I think that Kuznetsov is probably here to stay, and I think he deserved it. He had a better year this year. He did things. I mean, I don't think that he was unfairly maligned. I think it was fair, the shit that he was getting, for the way he had played and, you know, some of the off ice stuff. And I think he turned a lot of that around. I'll tell you one thing, like if Evgeny Kuznetsov made the play in game five that Oshie made trying to dangle through the neutral zone and it ends up in the Caps net 2 seconds later, he's like run out of town on a rail, you know. But because it was Oshie, everybody's like, oh, it wasn't. Yeah, he might have made a mistake, but they had plenty of time to to get in defensive position, you know, all this other stuff. And, you know, it just a bit of a double standard there. But I don't know. I think Kuznetsov's fine. I'm comfortable with him being there. And, you know, hopefully he continues to play more or less as he did for this year.
Yeah, wildly impressed with him this year. I think they definitely made the right choice not trading him for pennies on the dollar. And he's been, 7-8 for him playing like this, that doesn't sound like a bad deal in today's market.
Yeah.
John, is there anything that I did not touch on that you would like to talk about? I mean, we kind of steered away from Ovi a little bit. You did mention him not scoring at all at even strength. Anything there? Or?
No. No. You know, it is what it is. No, he had a good, you know, he scored 50 goals at like whatever age he's at, like 58 years old or whatever. And that's great. He did his thing. I think that there might be a reckoning for to kind of be realistic about the player that he is now. If he's a guy who can get you 50 goals, 40 goals, whatever, that's terrific. But I don't think realistically the Caps can expect him to lead them and be the guy that's going to lead them to another Stanley Cup right now without a much better supporting cast, which was always the case. Yep. Realistically, like nobody is the guy that gets you to the cup. You know, it's about supporting cast, and this team's supporting cast wasn't good enough. And right now, it's regular season good enough. It's get to the playoffs good enough. But they were never a serious contender with this roster. And, you know, I don't think Caps fans are okay with that. I don't think that the Caps management should be okay with that. I don't think they are.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think blowing it up is the right call either. Because I do think there is a pretty strong desire in the fan base and in management to have a team that's competitive enough in the short term to still kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, contrary to some online opinions, this fan base does care about more than just Ovi's chasing Wayne Gretzky's goal record. This fan base cares about winning and being competitive and being contenders. And, you know, maybe we've been spoiled by it by having 15 years of basically uninterrupted playoff opportunities, and most of those with teams that were legitimate contenders. But that's what we've become accustomed to. And, you know, some other franchises I'm sure would be thrilled just to make the playoffs, but I don't think that's where Caps fans are at. I don't think that's where Caps management is at.
Yeah, I think you are probably right on that one. Well, John, I appreciate you taking the time on your Sunday to join me and kind of break down the Caps. It's never a fun episode to have to do, but I do think we're going to have a more interesting summer than we maybe saw last year.
Probably.
Well, I'm sure I'll have you on again to talk about that soon.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. On behalf of myself and John Press, thanks for listening to this episode of Jabers Rink Radio. As always, we appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to us blather on about the Capitals. Really me. John doesn't do a lot of blathering at that. That's definitely an Adam problem. Some of my questions go on for about 5 minutes. But thank you all, and we look forward to being back on your airwaves soon.